the gaps in the filled spaces between the cabin wood, a piece chipped away. I came back in and said, "Daubing going to pieces here," thinking I might could go over it one time. Sophia was then swaddling the baby's bottom in cloth, singing softly. She stopped singing and said, "Is she a problem for you?" I laughed nervously. "Takes some adjusting." "So you gonna be adjusting or no?" "It is my notion," I said. I stepped in and sat down on the bed next to Sophia. "Remember where your notions got us last time," she said. "I have not forgot a single thing," I said. "But what I remember is not the hounds, nor what came after. What I remember is you. What I remember is being tied to that fence, how I felt right ready to die, but when I looked over, I saw not an inch of dying in you, no matter what Georgie had done to us." "Georgie," she said. At the mention of his name, I saw a look of rage. "He was gone when I got back here. Good for him he was, too. I cannot tell you of the vile and vengeful thoughts I put upon that man." "Maybe for the best, then," I said. "For him," she said. "For him." We were quiet for a while. Sophia was holding Caroline over her shoulder now, gently rubbing her back. "Hiram," she said, "why did you go away?" "Wasn't no go about it. They up and carried me off," I said. "You seen it." "Just like that, huh?" she said. "Carried you off." "You know how it happened," I said. "We were not the first. Hounds catch you out there, carry you off." "Well, I got this feeling that there was more to it. Things that maybe you cannot say, things that are not meant to be spoke about. Maybe it was you being walker kin, but that don't feel like all of it. For I know that men down here, men who believe in the task like Howell Walker do, why, they will sell their kin in a second, if only to no longer have to gaze upon the fruit of their sinful ways." "But I am tasked," I said. "Sure as you are tasked. Blood can't change that. It's just as simple as it look. Corrine had a need. Howell felt bad about Maynard dying and sent me for consolation. Fact that we had run made it even easier." "Well, that is the other part. While you was gone, I seen my share of Corrine, more than I have seen of Nathaniel even. She came down here every few weeks or so, and I do not know why she would have reason to see me. And I do not know why I myself wasn't sent Natchez way. Why are we here, Hiram? Why do we remain?"
Seemed like a question for Nathaniel.
"Hi," she said, "I don't think he even know we ran. Times I have seen him since, and it has not been very often, he has not bothered a mention."
"I don't know. I ain't in nobody's heads."
"I ain't saying you are."
"Yeah, well, you were always saying something."
She slapped me on the shoulder with her free hand and frowned. It was quiet between us for some long moments. I was thinking of Corrine and why she would feel a need to look in on Sophia. I was wondering about what I had been told. And then I looked over to Sophia, who now had Carrie on her lap and was singing to her something soft and soothing. Baby Caroline was batting at the air, fighting sleep, fighting her own eyes. For a moment, I was back in Philadelphia, back with Mars, and I remembered how he opened himself to me, how the whole White family opened themselves and what that meant for me, how Bland had opened himself to me, how his words had freed me from the guilt of Maynard's dying, and I felt now that I owed some of that to Sophia. "I know a child ain't only a joyful thing, I seen it. But so often I have seen women who would not wish a child upon themselves, still and all, forming their whole life around it. And I see you have formed your life around this young'un, formed your life around her before she even came. You would run for her. You would kill for her. I see how you look at that girl now, and I remember. I remember what you told me. 'It's coming, Hiram,' you said, 'and I will watch as my daughter is taken in, as I was taken in. None can say it was not said. And though I remember everything, I cannot say I always hear it. But I hear you now, and I hear much more. And I know that men put such terrible and wretched things upon a child brought to them who ain't they blood. Mayhaps I'd be one of them men. Mayhaps I'd be so far in my own regard, in my own wrath and hate, that I shook my head. I am saying that she ain't no problem. And you ain't no problem. I am the problem. And I paused here for a moment, and Sophia squeezed my hand. I am saying that I knew who her daddy was almost the moment I saw her. It was the rules. I come back and see you here with this baby Caroline, who is not blood. And I swear, at this moment, it was as if baby Caroline could hear my words, for she looked over and reached a hand toward me. And I slipped my hand out from under Sophia's and reached toward the baby, who took my small finger in her grip. "Sep, she is my blood," I said. "High yellow like me, with green-gray eyes like mine. But not only mine. These are Walker eyes, and that is Walker hair, goes back to the earliest one, for I have seen it noted in all descriptions of him in the local Elm County history. And it is the funniest thing, because them green-gray eyes skipped Maynard. But they have arisen most prominently in Caroline, baby Caroline. And there is pain in that. Ain't clean. It's muck. I have told other men the same, even though I must now struggle to take my own medicine. I want you to know what I have seen, the men I have known since I have gone, the men who have had to decide what they love more. The everything, lovely and mean, right in front of them, or their own wrath and regard. And I choose the muck of this world, Sophia. I choose the everything." There were tears now in her eyes. "Can I hold her?" I asked. And she laughed through her tears and said, "Careful, she might well carry you off." Then she smiled and pulled baby Caroline up off her lap and, cupping her backside in one hand and shoulders in the other, presented her to me. And I saw baby Caroline look up at those green grays and that same infant obsession. I reached out, trying to do my best imitation of Sophia, putting my hands directly under hers and then slipping them out. And I pulled the girl close to me until her head sat in the crook of my elbow. And when I felt her settle in, and she did not cry or wail, when I felt the warm muck of her in my arms, I thought of my father, and how he had never held me like this, not in symbol or in fact. And I remembered how I had, for all my youth, chased him in search of this moment. And I thought of the woman who had given that moment to me, because that is what everyone told me, that my mother loved me more than anything, that she formed her life around me until she was ripped away. My mother, whom I could not remember. With Lochless hollowing itself out, with the warrens all haunted and gray, and that dying season now folding into winter, Caroline was a light upon our world. It was Thina, with no one else there and willing, who had midwife to carry, and so, out of that feeling, Thina would, at times, care for the baby herself to spell Sophia. That she did that following Sunday, when I was to repair the daubing on Sophia's cabin. I worked for about an hour and then stepped inside. Sophia had started a fire. She was all bundled up and sat in front of the fireplace, holding her hands toward it. She looked at me and said, "You ain't cold?" "I am," I said. "Can't you tell?" And I put my hands on her cheeks and reached down to her neck. She laughed and shrieked, "Boy, stop!" I chased her out of the cabin and into the street for a few minutes until we collapsed in laughter onto the ground. "All right, I really am cold now," I said.
I'm trying to tell you, she said.
We went inside and sat by the fire.
Day like this, she said, could sure use me a demijohn. My Carolina Mercury, I tell you. He used to keep his share.
Then she looked at me and said, forgive me, High, I do not mean to speak of old things. To be mine can't be mine, I said. Besides, give me an idea. Just wait right here. I walked back up to the house and into the Warrens. I stopped past Thina's room and saw the door cracked open, and looking in, I saw that Caroline was asleep on Thina's bosom, much as Kessia had told me she would be in days past. I walked into my room and took the bottle of rum that Mars had given me on my departure. When I got back, Sophia was sitting there with her hands underneath their opposite arms, and when I showed her the bottle, she smiled and said,
I know there is something with you, something about the places you've been.
I opened the bottle, and she said,
you ain't the same man who left. You can try as you might to fool me, but you ain't the same. I can see it, High. Can't hide from me.
I passed her the bottle, and she took it to her mouth and tilted her head back as if trying to catch rain in her face, and then drank.
Ooh, she said, wiping her mouth with her sleeve. Yeah, you've been some places.
But I am here now, I said, and took a drink. And besides, what about you?
What about me, she said. What you want to know, I shall lay it out all before you.
I took another drink, then sat the bottle on the ground. What happened, I asked. What happened after that night they had us out there?
Huh, she said, well, they kept me pinned in that jail, much as I assume they pinned you, and I knew I was done, I tell you. Natchez called, Natchez, and a girl like me, baby or no, I knew I would be put right out to fancy. I was right terrified, I tell you. I know I tried to be strong that night out there, High, and I was because I had you, and I felt I had you to worry for. And long as I had that, wasn't much time for thinking of my own worries. But that day the hounds pinned me in that jail, it all hit me, all the evil that was about to come down on me. Wanted to cry, but I knew I had to be strong. I just talked to my Caroline that whole time, just talked to her, and I'm telling you, she soothed me. Like I felt myself to no longer be so alone. It's like you say, I did not ask for her, but in that moment I was so happy to have her, even though she was but a small thing blooming in me. And I think that was the moment when I became a mother to her. I was angry at what that man Nathaniel had done to me, what he had put upon me, and though I am thankful for her, I will never be thankful to him. Caroline belongs to me, and my God. I named her for my lost home, for my Carolina, the land from which I was stripped by no doing of my own. And that is the whole of it. In that jail, with the knife of Natchez at my throat, Caroline, my home. She saved me.
I handed her the bottle, and she took another drink, shivered, and said, She wiped her mouth with her sleeve, and was silent for a moment, and I just sat there, watching her in this silence. When she turned back to pass the demijohn to me, I felt that she looked different, as though the very texture of her story had somehow been etched into her face. But that's not really the whole of it, she said. Late that night, same night, I was drifting off to sleep, huddled in the corner of the jail, rats scurrying around, cold, drafty air blowing in, and I look up and see a shadow looking in on me. And then the shadow walk away for a few, and I'm wondering if this is some kind of dream. But then the shadow come back with one of the hounds, who opens the door to my jail, and he say, get on! And got to say it again, you know. So I get up, and then I see that it ain't no shadow at all. It is Corrine Quinn
in her mourning clothes. And when I walked outside, Cochise was there with her people. And they sat me in the back with her, and she told me she knew what I was headed for, what was coming, should Nathaniel hear of my run, but he really ain't need to hear nothing. She was sure of it. Nobody needed to know. I could go back to everything as it was before. Only as thing she asked is if she could stop down to the street every now and again and speak to me.
Speak to you about what? I asked.
Mostly things down here, Sophia said. Like I tell you, she stop in now and again and ask about who's still here and who gone Natchez way. Always struck me as curious, you know. But after Caroline come, my only desire was to keep that baby safe. I ain't care about much else.
But I did ask her about you, Sophia said. She put her arm around mine as she said this.
I asked her what they would do with you. She told me not to worry. You'd been gone a spell, but you would return. You would come back.
Can't say I believed her, huh? You know, I have lost so much in my time, and I have found that what's gone is gone, and that is all there is.
Except you.
You came back, she said,
and she was looking at me, looking through me with dagger eyes. I felt the room spinning all around me.
I can hardly believe it, but you have come back. Come back to me.
I had now stopped thinking. I felt the beams and rafters and daubing of the cabin bend, and with them the beams and rafters and daubing of the whole world encircle us and close us together. All of nature seemed in on it, so that when I tasted the rum of her mouth, it was the sugar of life. And only then did I understand that I did not really remember everything, that there were things beyond my mother that I had chosen to forget, not pictures, but the feelings behind them. I had forgotten how much I dearly missed Sophia, how much I longed for her, had forgotten those days in Philadelphia when all I wanted was for Raymond and Otha to leave me be, so that I could be alone with the memory of her dancing by that large holiday fire. And I had forgotten the low and deep sickness of longing pushing through the vessels of my body like a train pushing down the track. I'd forgotten how I accepted this sickness like a cough I could not shake. Had forgotten the days when, alone, I drew my arms around my stomach and doubled over, feeling loneliness consume me. I loved her, and perhaps knowing even then the great danger of such a feeling under the task, under slavery, and even in the underground, I had forgotten as much of it as I could, though it had not forgotten me. And now it was here with us, between us. And when she stroked her hand against my face, when she took my arm in her hands, she did not take it soft but firm and wanting. And I knew then that all that I felt, all of the longing in me, all the bridled wanting of blind and violent youth, and the low need to vent it, was not solely my own. Hours later we were in the loft, staring upwards. Her arm was across my chest, her hand fingering my shoulder as if playing a piano.
By God, it is you, she said. Your hands, your eyes, your face.
It was now way past dark, so much so that I knew morning would soon be upon us, and then the rafters of the world would relax and we would be left in our regular places and with our regular tasks at Lochless. But some things could not go back, and among them was a new knowledge that I felt upon me, and it was the same knowledge that compelled Otha White, the mania that took hold of him, how he could never truly sleep without Lydia. For the first time, I understood conduction, understood it as a relay of feeling, assembled from moments so striking that they become real as stone and steel, real as an iron cat roaring down the tracks, chasing blackbirds from the awning. As I dressed, while Sophia watched from the loft above,
I looked at the mantle and saw the toy horse I had retrieved from the home of Georgie Parks. And I swear to you that it almost glowed.
Sophia came back down from the loft now and stood behind me with her arms wrapped around my waist, her head on my back, as I studied the wooden horse in my hands.
"Go ahead," she said, "take it. Told you it's a little too soon for her to have such things."
"Yeah," I said. "Guess so." I turned to Sophia then, with the small wooden horse still in my hand, and one last time, there in the dark, the world drew my lips to hers, and we held each other as if holding to the mast of a ship in a great storm.
"All right," I said. "Probably should go."
"Probably should," she said.
"All right," I said again,
and when I walked outside into a different world, I did so backwards, to preserve the look of her in those small blue hours, to hold it for as long as I might. Everything would have been easier had I simply gone back up to the Warrens then and blacked my brogans and wiped myself clean. But this new understanding, this unlocking of old notions, prevailed on me. What I did instead was walk down a path that led me through the darkness to Dumsilk Road. I now risked the hounds, which even then patrolled these roads for what had to be the last runaways out of a diminished Elm County. But as I walked, I fingered the wooden horse in my hands, and I knew that even if it had been the good years, the hounds could never truly threaten me. 20 minutes later, I was back there, back at the River Goose, which appeared not as a river, but as a wide black mass stretching out across the land. I walked toward that mass until I could hear the river lapping gently up against its banks. It was cloudy out, so that there was no moon to illuminate anything. But there at the banks, I held up my hand, the same hand in which I held the wooden horse, and saw the blue light of conduction glowing out. And when I looked back at the river, I saw the now familiar mist rolling toward me. No one had to teach me what came next. I did it almost by animal instinct. It was the simplest of motions, a firm squeeze that I now applied to the wooden horse. And having done this, I saw the new mist over the river reach out, like the white tendrils of some mythical beast, and snatch me into its maw. Chapter 31. The summoning of a story, the water, and the object that made memory real as brick, that was conduction. What I might do with such a power was not my immediate concern, so much as making it through that day. The fatigue fell on me hard, the same fatigue I'd felt before, and the same that I had seen on Harriet. Somehow, I struggled through my duties, but when they were over, I slept through supper until the next day, when I awoke to dress Howell, serve his morning meal, and assist him through the light rigors of his day. And when supper came, there was a part of me then that glowed bright as conduction itself, for I knew that I would see Sophia there. And when I did that evening, I felt myself walking in some other world. I wondered if I had dreamt it all, but she was right there, with Thina and with Caroline, and when she saw me, she smiled and simply said, "You came back." We spent the next few weeks happily together. At first we tried to hide the new developments from them. After supper, after Sophia made a show of leaving with Caroline, and after I had taken my father his cider, sat with him, and put him to bed, I would walk down to the street. Early in those smallest hours, I would make my way back up to my own bed, lie there for a half an hour or so, and then begin my labors. It was not as strange as it sounds. For many a tasking man at Lochless with wife and children on other manses, this had long been the ritual. But my version was bizarre because it seemed to pin itself on the blindness of Thina, and she was not blind. So it should have been a surprise when she said one evening after supper while holding Caroline, "I am happy for you." No more was said of it. But there was not just Thina to worry after. Nathaniel Walker still held a known and particular title to Sophia and Caroline, and I well knew what happened to tasking folk found to have interfered with such claims. Corrine may have saved us once, but nothing would save either of us from his prideful wrath. It was a beautiful time, one of the best of my long life, but still it was built upon the shifting ground of the task, and we knew that sooner or later the ground must shift again. Early in December we heard of Nathaniel Walker's return, and a week later of Sophia's inevitable summons. My father, still unwise to what was happening around him, told me to deliver Sophia. I cannot say that I found this pleasing, but I had now well absorbed the lesson. For Sophia to be mine, she must never be mine. And what was between us was not ownership, but a promise to be in the company of each other by any means for as long as we could. And preserving the illusion was our means that wintry day when I drove her out to Nathaniel Walker's place. We left early. Sophia slept for the first leg. We talked for the second.
"So what was the daily with Corrine?" she asked.
"A clawfoot tub, 5 white maids, each one naked as the day."
We laughed.
"I do not hear you denying it."
"I don't deny nothing, Sophia."
"'Cept intelligence on your time away," she said. "Boy, what in God's name did they do to you?"
"Nothing, really. I mean, ain't much to tell."
"It ain't you I'm interested in, High. I am interested in her interest in me. I still can't get for the life of me why she ain't leave me to Natchez."
"Don't know. Maybe she favor you."
"Whites favoring another man's slave? Now when you done heard of that?"
I said nothing.
"I hear she travel a bit. Hear she always filling your daddy's ear with stories of the scandalous sight she done seen up north. Guess she would never take no colored with her on that kind of jaunt."
"Maybe, I don't know."
"Sure you do, High. Either you been or you ain't."
I kept looking straight ahead at the road.
"Whatever, don't try that on me. You ain't never been out of this here county, much less up north. If you had, I am sure I would never have caught a sight of you again."
"Why's that?"
"'Cause if you was up there with them free folks, you'd have to be as dumb as rocks to come back down here, I tell you. Should I ever set my foot onto any grain of free soil, you will not hear any tell of me ever again."
"Huh. And that'd be the end of us, I guess.
Now, you know you are not in any way built to run. Tried it once before, but you are tied to Lockless. The very fact of your return is proof."
"Not my choosing. Not my choosing." We reached Nathaniel Walker's place in late morning and drove off to the side road, where we waited for the courier, who would greet us and then disappear with Sophia. And I must leave them to their private business. What did I feel out there? Surely there are higher callings than delivering a woman you love to another man. But I had years of practice having had to hide so much, and I knew whatever agony I felt being there must be doubled in Sophia. And I was older now. I understood things I could not even imagine months ago, so that I felt my greatest desire in that moment was to ease her. So when I noticed the edgy silence between us, and none of her usual jest, I spoke up and said, "How'd you get here while I was gone?"
"Walked," she said.
"You walked here?"
"I did, with my whole costume and effects. Thank God for Thena. She watched my Caroline that weekend. Only had to do it once, but I tell you, when I got that call, I was a mess. But I did it, fit my face, my dress, and unmentionables right over there behind them bushes."
"My God.
Of all the things I done did, that was the one that left me feeling the most low. Had to strip down to what God gave me in them bushes, afraid of who might walk by and what they might do. All I could do was sing to myself as I did, sing low and quiet, sing for courage."
Then Sophia breathed out long and heavy and said,
Don't ever doubt that I hate them. Don't you dare doubt it.
And as she said it, her face shifted into an executioner's mask. There was no furrowed or raised eyebrow, no spread of the mouth, no light in her brown eyes. Her face mirrored the truth of the hate she now spoke. She shook her head and said,
"The things I would put on them, High, the things that I would be capable of. You see me here now in this small body? Why, if my hands, my arms were as those of men, what I would do with my energies. I have thought of it, you see. I thought of it even in this body. My God, what I would do while he slept, with a kitchen blade or a tincture in his tea or white powder in his cake. I thought of it very often. And well, then I had my Caroline. And that was that. And I am a good woman, I tell you, I am. But what I would put on them, given my time, what I would put on them."
She trailed off here, into her own thoughts. After 20 minutes or so, a well-dressed tasking man emerged from the woody path. He walked over to the chaise and shot us a stern and disapproving look.
"He cannot have you today. He will send word."
Then he turned away and walked back down the path.
"Did he say anything else?"
Sophia called out. But the man did not turn back, and even if he heard Sophia, it was clear he had no inclination to answer. We sat there for a few moments, not quite sure what to do. Then Sophia turned to me with a wry smile and said,
"You happy about this, ain't you?"
"I ain't unhappy," I said.
"Besides, where you was just talking, I'd think you felt much the same."
I do, she said.
"But it is odd. I have never had it happen this way before."
She was quiet for a moment, thinking to herself, turning over some recent theory.
"What?" I said. "You probably did it," she said. "Some sort of way I'm betting that this is all you're doing."
I laughed lightly, shook my head, and said,
"It is amazing what you take me as, like I got powers over these white folks, or I am some sort of conjure man." "You some sort of something, I will say that."
We laughed. I pulled the reins on the chaise and turned back around toward Luckless.
"I am sorry, Hiram," she said. "You know I don't want to be back there. I want to be as far away as I can get. But if I got to do the work, I'd like to be done with it. Hate having this hanging over my head. I am a slave with him. But since you done come back, I feel myself to be as free as I have ever been. And though I know this is not the true article, it is something, and I want it."
Then she leaned over and kissed me lightly on the cheek.
"I want as much of it as I can take."
Oh, to be back there and be young again, to be seated in the dawning hours of my life, the sun of everything breaking over the horizon, and all the promises and tragedies ahead of me. To be there in that chaise with a day pass and a girl I loved more than anything, in the last doleful days of old and desolate Virginia. Oh, to be there with time to spare, with time to dream of riding out as far as that Elm County road went until fortune abandoned us. We rode on, speaking of the old days and all the lost ones of Elm County. Thurston, Lucille, Lem, Garrison. We talked of how they had gone, how Natchez had taken them. Some quiet, some singing, some laughing, some swinging. "What happened to Pete?" I asked.
"Sent over the bridge about a month before you come back," Sophia said.
"Thought Hal would never part with him," I said. "That man had such a hand for them orchards."
"All gone now," she said. "Natchez, as are all the rest, as are we all, soon enough. All gone, all done."
"No," I said, "I think
We are survivors, you and I. If by devilish means, we are survivors. Maybe not much more than that, but we are, I do believe, survivors. The winter had not yet given its full effect, and now we rode through a clear, crisp winter morning. We climbed high up on the road now, and I could see the goose, and see across the shore over toward Starfall, and in the far distance I could see the bridge from which I had conducted myself into this other life. But what if we are not, Sophia?
What?
All gone, all done, I said. What if there was some way by which we might make ourselves more than all the misery we have seen here?
Dismal of your dreams without facts, all sideways. You remember how that went, right?
I remember well. But we are connected, just as you say. We are older than our years. The place has made us that way by all we have seen. We are out of time, you and I. What was glorious to them is crumbling before our eyes. But suppose we did not have to crumble with them. We know well that they are going down, Sophia. Suppose we did not have to go with them. She was now looking at me directly.
I cannot, Hiram, she said. Not like that, not again. I know it's something about you, and when you are ready to tell me what that is, then I shall be with you, but I cannot go on just a word, not again. It ain't just me anymore. So if you have something, I have to know the all of it. I have said it. I would kill to be off of this. Kill to save my daughter from it.
Can't kill this one, I said.
No, she said. Can only run, but I must know how, and I must know to what.
We did not speak much after that, as both our time was now much occupied with what had been said and the events of the day. But when we arrived back at Lochless, we found Thina seated at the edge of the tunnel with her head in her hand. There was a bandage wrapped around her head. She was in her work dress with no coat. Caroline was nowhere to be seen.
Thina, I said.
Yeah,
she said. What happened? Sophia said. Where's Caroline?
Inside, sleeping.
Sophia darted into the tunnel. I squatted down and touched the side of Thina's temple where a spot of blood had pooled in the bandage.
Thina, what happened?
I don't know, she said. I can't remember.
Well, tell me what you do, I said. She squinted her eyes.
I don't.
All right, I said, come on, let's get in. I put her arm over my neck and lifted, and as I did, I saw Sophia coming back out of the tunnel.
She's fine, asleep just like Thina said it,
she said.
Looked like Thina put her in your bed, and I can see why.
Then Sophia started to cry and said,
Hiram, they took it. I know what they was doing, they took it.
We walked a few steps, and I felt Thina's feet begin to drag, so I picked her up in my arms and carried her. Hold on, I said. We passed Thina's room first, and what I saw was half a chair on the ground and splinters everywhere. I walked past there to my old room, where I saw Caroline just beginning to stir. Sophia pulled the covers off and picked her up. I laid Thina down in her place and pulled the cover back over her. I turned to Sophia.
The hell happened?
She shook her head. She was still crying. I walked back to Thina's room. It looked like someone had taken an axe to everything, the bed, the mantel, the one chair. It was all smashed. And then I looked over and saw the true aim. Thina's lockbox, which was splintered in two. Kneeling down, I saw some old souvenirs, beads, spectacles, a couple of playing cards. But what I did not see was the laundry money that Thina had so dutifully deposited every week, as her payment on freedom. I stood there for a moment trying to understand who would do such a thing. I had heard stories of old masters making such deals and then reneging, keeping all the money for themselves, but this made no sense with Thina, who was old and willing to compensate Howell for her freedom and relieve him of her care. and the violence of it, the axing, spoke of someone who had no other means to compel Thena. And I knew, right then, that whoever had done it had to be tasked. You don't ever know how much you need your people until they're gone. By then, Lochless was down to perhaps 25 souls. But it was not as it had been before, when though there were more, we were all known to each other. Now, I only knew a few of them on the street, and knew fewer still down in the Warrens. In the old days, there were men, slave doctors, who could have seen to Thena. But they were all gone, sent out, and we were left to ourselves. I thought of Philadelphia, and the warmth I felt knowing there was always someone. And I felt that a kind of lawlessness had now descended upon Lochless. Whom would I tell of the assault on Thena? My father? And what would be his answer then? To send more across the bridge? Could I even believe that the right perpetrator would be sent? We made our share of changes over the next week. We moved, all of us, out of the Warrens and down to Thena's old cabin in the street. It was where we felt our safest, and all it meant for me was that I would rise a bit earlier in the morning to get to my father in time for my duties. We did not leave Thena alone. Sophia took up the washing, and I assisted, as I could, on Sundays, hauling up the water, gathering the wood, and wringing the laundry. Thena was mostly back to normal after a week. But the terror of the assault changed her, and for the first time in all my time of knowing her, I saw true fear on her face, fear of what could happen, remaining there at Lochless. And that was when I thought of Kessia, and knew that the time of redeeming promises had come. Thena was not my only concern. I learned later, through my father, that Nathaniel had never returned from Tennessee despite his summons, and had been delayed by some urgent business. What that might be, I could not know. But I thought that perhaps his intentions for Sophia might well go beyond what I previously conceived. And I was not the only one thinking this. Sophia said, "You ever think about me going that way?" We were up in the loft, staring through the darkness up at the rafters. Caroline was asleep between us, while down below on the ground floor, Thena snored softly. "I do," I said, "especially lately."
"You know what I hear?" she asked.
"What?"
"I hear things are different in Tennessee. Hear that it's far from this society and there are different customs, and there are white men there who take colored women like man and wife. And I've been wondering about Nathaniel and his particulars. For instance, the desire that I make myself up like..."
She trailed off as though working her way through a thought, and then said,
"Hiram, is that man grooming me for something? Is it his intention to get out of custom and finally install me as his Tennessee wife?"
"Is that what you want?" "Tennessee?" I asked.
"Is that what the hell you think I want?" she asked. "Don't you know by now? What I want is the same thing I have always wanted, what I have always told you I wanted. I want my hands, my legs, my arms, my smile, all my precious parts to be mine, and mine alone."
She turned toward me now, and though I was still looking at the ceiling, I could feel her looking directly at me.
"And should I feel a need, should I desire to give all that to some other? Then it must be my own need, my own desire to do as such. Do you understand, Hiram?"
"I do."
"You do not. You can't."
"Then why do you keep telling me?"
"I am not telling you. I am telling myself. I am remembering my promises to myself and to my Caroline."
We lay there in silence until we fell asleep. But I forgot none of the conversation. The time was so clearly now. I had performed my duties well, keeping Hawkins informed. And more, I had opened the secret of conduction for myself. I felt it now time for Corrine Quinn to make good on her portion of the bargain. Holiday came upon us. It was to be a lonely time. The Walker clan would not be returning that year, and with Maynard gone, my father now faced the prospect of the blessed season all alone. But Corrine Quinn, having grown closer and closer to him, relieved his lonesome situation by coming to Lochless with her own retinue, this time much larger than merely Hawkins and Amy. They were trusted cooks, maids, and other caretakers. And too, Corrine brought a collection of cousins and friends to entertain my father, who was now up in age. And this ensemble pleased him greatly, for there was a rapt audience before him eager to hear the tales of old Virginia. It was a charade, of course. Every one of these cooks, caretakers, and cousins was an agent, some whom I'd known from my time training at Bryston, and others who worked out of the Starfall station. The plan was now clear to me. As Elm County declined and fell into obsolescence, and the quality quit the country in the crawl space left behind, the underground would ply its trade, expanding its war. Looking back now from the prospect of years, I confess myself filled with admiration. Corrine was daring, ruthless, ingenious, and while Virginia lived in fear of another Prophet Gabriel or Nat Turner, what they should have feared was right in their own home, in the garb of ladyhood, the model of fine breeding, porcelain elegance, and undying grace. I could not see the genius of it, not at the time, for we were, even if united in our goal, too much committed to opposing routes. Tasking men were people to me, not weapons, nor cargo, but people with lives and stories and lineage, all of which I remembered. And the longer I served on the underground, this sense did not diminish, but increased. So it was that day, at the closing of the year, when I insisted on what must be done, that we stood at opposite ends. We were down by the street. Our story was simple. Corrine had desired a tour of the old quarters, and I was her guide. So I had escorted her down from the main house, and we made small, insignificant talk until we cleared the gardens and the orchards and found ourselves on the winding path to the street. When I came back to Howells, it was on the promise that a family would be conducted north, I said. The time for that conduction is now.
And why now? She asked.
Something happened here a couple of weeks ago, I said. Somebody got after Athena, took an axe handle to her head, and then busted up her quarters. Took all the money she had been saving from the washing.
My Lord, she said,
and a look of real concern broke through the mask of ladyhood.
Did you find the villain?
No, I said. She don't remember who it was. Besides, the way people are moved in and out of here these days, tough to tell. I know more of this crew you have brought with you than of the people who work here every day.
Should we investigate?
No, I said. We should get her out.
But not just her, right? There is another, your Sophia?
Not mine, I said, just Sophia.
Well, I'll be, Corrine said with a faint smile. How much have you grown in 1 year? It truly is a marvel. You really are one of us. Forgive me. It is a thing to behold.
She was regarding me in amazement, though I now think she was not so much regarding me in that moment as regarding the fruit of her own endeavor, so that it was not I who amazed Corrine so much as her own powers.
Do you yet remember? She asked.
Remember?
Your mother, she said. Have your remembrances of her returned yet?
No, I said. But I have had other concerns.
Of course, forgive me. Sophia.
I am worried that Nathaniel Walker will call her title, call her down to Tennessee.
Oh, you needn't worry about that, Sophia said.
Why?
Because I made arrangements with him a year ago. In 1 week, her title will revert to me.
I don't understand, I said.
Corrine gave me a look of bemused concern. Don't you, she said. She has had his child, hasn't she?
Yes, I said.
Then you understand, she said.
You are, after all, a man yourself, a simple creature of severe but brief interests, subject to seasons of lust that wax and wane, as is your uncle, your man of quality, Nathaniel Walker. And now that he is in Tennessee, he has an entire field for his passions. What would he need of Sophia?
But he called on her, I said. It was not but 2 weeks ago that he called on her.
I'm sure he did, she said. A souvenir, perhaps.
Corrine Quinn was among the most fanatical agents I ever encountered on the underground. All of these fanatics were white. They took slavery as a personal insult or affront, a stain upon their name. They had seen women carried off to fancy or watched as a father was stripped and beaten in front of his child, or seen whole families pinned like hogs into rail cars, steamboats, and jails. Slavery humiliated them because it offended a basic sense of goodness that they believed themselves to possess. And when their cousins perpetrated the base practice, it served to remind them how easily they might do the same. They scorned their barbaric brethren, but they were brethren all the same. So their opposition was a kind of vanity, a hatred of slavery that far outranked any love of the slave. Corrine was no different, and it was why, relentless as she was against slavery, she could so casually condemn me to the hole, condemn Georgie Parks to death, and mock an outrage put upon Sophia. I had not put it together like this in that moment. What I had was not logic, but anger, and not anger at the slandering of something I owned, but of someone who held me upright in the darkest night of my life. But I did not vent this anger. I had been practicing the mask long before I met Corrine. Instead, I simply said, I want them out. Both of them.
There's no need, said Corrine. I have title to the girl, and so she is saved.
And Thina?
It's not time, Hiram, she said. There are a great many things in the works, and we must take care to not endanger them. The powers of Elm County are diminished, and every day we grow stronger. But we must take care, and I have done much already that might arouse suspicion. There is the fact of what we have done at Starfall. There is the fact that both of you ran, that the girl ran. Did she tell you I looked after her?
She did.
Then you must understand. There is too much to contend with at once. If we were ever figured out, so many would suffer.
She had dropped her mocking tone and was now on the verge of pleading.
Hiram, listen to me, she said. Your service to the underground has been of great value. Your reports on your father have opened up possibilities we had not even considered. Even if you never master conduction, you have proven yourself more than worth the risks we took in bringing you out. But we have much to balance and consider. What does it look like for me to take the title of Nathaniel Walker's consort only for her to immediately disappear? And this woman Thina has made an enterprise out of the washing. Will people not wonder when she suddenly stops coming around? We have to be so very careful, Hiram.
You made a promise, I said.
Yes, I did, she said. And it is my intention to keep it. But not just now. We will need time.
I locked onto Corrine with a hard gaze. It was the first time I had looked at her without the respect that Virginia demanded. She was not being unreasonable, in fact, she was correct. But I was hot over her mocking of Sophia, and there were my own feelings and shame at having delivered Sophia into outrage all those times, at having left Thina to run, and then left her again to be assaulted. At my mother, who was sold, who I could not protect, who I did not avenge. All of that roiled in me, and it shot out in the look that I now put upon Corrine.
You cannot do it, Corrine said. You will need us, and we will not consent. We will not put ourselves to the sword for your brief and small infatuations. You cannot do it.
and then a look of recognition bloomed across her face until it covered the whole of her visage, in horror, and she understood.
"Or maybe you can," she said. "Hiram, you will bring hell upon us all. Think. Think beyond your emotions. Think beyond all your guilt. You have no right to endanger all who might be so rescued. Think, Hiram."
But I was thinking. I was thinking of Mary Bronson and her lost boys. I was thinking of Lambert under the Alabama ox and Otha presently tracking across the country for the freedom of his Lydia. Lydia, who endured all outrage for the chance of family.
"Think, Hiram," she said.
"You told me freedom was a master," I said. "You said it was a driver. You said none can fly, that we are tied to the rail. I know. You told me. And because I know, I must serve."
"You know I am not without sympathy," she said. "I know what happened to you."
"No, you don't," I said. "You can't."
"Hiram," she said, "promise me. You will not doom us."
"I promise that I will not doom us," I said. But the wordplay put no folly upon her, and the less said about our remaining interview, the better. For I hold her, all these years later, in the highest respect. She was speaking in full faith and honesty. And so was I. Chapter 32. I was out there on my own now, and if conduction was to be achieved, it must be done by my hand alone, and it seemed to me that there was no longer any avoiding the facts of my departure. I would have to tell them both, Sophia and Thina. I decided I would tell them each separately, for my confession to Thina involved matters far greater than the underground. So I would start with what I thought was the simpler of confessions. Sophia. Thina had begun to have nightmares, we thought from her attack. And so we got in the habit, on difficult nights, of leaving Caroline down below with her to sleep on her bosom and calm her. And it was such a night as this when I felt it was time. "Sophia," I said, "I am ready to tell you for what, and I am ready to tell you how." She had been looking up into the gabled rafters, and now she rolled over, pulled the Osnaburg blanket over herself, and turned to me. "It's about where I've been," I said. "About where I was and what happened when I was there."
"Wasn't Bryston?" she said.
"It was," I said, "but that was just the start of it." Even in that darkness I could see her eyes, and they were too much for me to take. I rolled over so that my back was to her. I breathed in deep, and then breathed back out. And then I told her that I had, in the time I was gone, seen another country, taken in the easy northern air, that I had awakened when I wanted and moved as I pleased, that I had trained into Baltimore, walked through the Carnival of Philadelphia, and driven through the uplands of New York, and that I had done this all through my affiliation with that agency of freedom known only to her in whispers and tales, the underground. And I told her how it had happened, how Corrine Quinn had found me, how they had trained me at Bryston, how Hawkins and Amy were in on the ruse. I told her how Georgie Parks had been destroyed, and how I had been party to that destruction. I told her about the family, White, how they had loved me, how they had saved Mary Bronson, how Mikaja Bland had given up his life. I told her how I had met Moses, how Kessia had survived the racetrack, how she remembered Thina, how I had promised to conduct Thina, and how I now planned to conduct her, too. "I promised to get you out," I said, "and I mean to keep that promise." I turned back over, and I found those eyes waiting for me. There was a kind of deadness in them now. No shock or surprise, no emotion betrayed.
"That why you come," she said, "to keep your promise?"
"No," I said, "I came back because I was told to."
"And had you not been told to?" she asked.
"Sophia, I thought of you all the time up there, I said. I reached over and stroked her face with my hand. I worried for you, worried for what they might have done to you.
But while you were worrying, she said, I was down here, not knowing what was coming, not knowing what had happened to you, not knowing anything of that woman Corrine's intentions.
She got your title from Nathaniel, I said. You ain't going to Tennessee. She shook her head and said,
And what am I supposed to make of that? You come back with this tale, and I do believe it, I really do, but Hiram, I know you. I do not know them.
But you do know me, I said. And I am sorry for how it has come down, but I have heard you now. I have heard all of what you were saying from the start. And I understand that it is not just you, but Caroline.
I'm getting you out. Thena, too. And what about you, she said.
I am here until told otherwise, I said. I am part of this now. It is bigger than me and my desires.
Bigger than me, too, she said.